This is the Iran Human Rights Podcast, a review of major human rights issues by the International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran. For many of us, scrolling down our Facebook feed or checking in with our favorite blog is a daily ritual. Unfortunately, using the internet is like navigating a minefield in certain countries. In today's podcast, we take a closer look at surfing the rocky waves of the World Wide Web in Iran. Mehdi Yeyanejad is the founder of Balaturin, a popular Iranian website that aggregates and shares trending stories with its online community, made up of activists, journalists, and bloggers. If you're familiar with sites like Dig or Reddit, Balaturin is similar in how it works. Basically, the site allows users to post, comment, and vote on top stories. Then the stories with the most votes get bumped up to the front page. It's become the go-to source for non-state-sanctioned news in Iran. We recently caught up with Mehdi to find out more.
It's a very strong community already. There are about 40, 50,000 members. And most of the journalists, most of the social and political activists are a member of Balaturin, and anything that makes it to the front page of Balaturin is seen by most of Iranian news editors, whether they are in Iran or outside Iran, political and social activists. And basically, anything that gets to the front page is observed by many, and it gets magnified by the fact that they might write about it and they would talk about it.
Balaturin went public in the summer of 2006. It managed to stay under the radar of Iranian officials in its infancy, but they eventually caught on and attempted to block or disable the site on multiple occasions. Unsurprisingly, the website was most heavily targeted during the 2009 elections and subsequent protests.
Most of the days that there were demonstrations, we faced hacking attempts or DDoS attacks, which is basically, DDoS attacks means they send so many fake queries to a site that makes it unable to respond to the real users and real audience of the website. And basically, the website was down on some of the days that were critical days. And it's been a constant challenge to fight this, considering that Iranian government has far more resources than we do.
Let's take a step back for a minute. Can you give us a brief history of internet use in Iran?
Iran was one of the first countries in Middle East that, started using internet back in 92, 93. Basic scientific community, academic community started using internet, and I think the more political, social potential wasn't apparent at that point.
So at that time, the government didn't view the internet as a threat?
Iranian government realized that this is something that they really have to carefully watch and in many cases prevent its growth, in fact. By early 2000, they started working on censorship tools on internet, for internet, and also devising policies and rules and so on. Even like one of the main decisions they made, which was pretty much it was a technical decision that made an impact. It was limiting this internet speed, which was like 128 kbps for home use. So basically, they limited the internet speed just because they didn't want people and start using videos and watching videos online and so on. As the time went on, censorship in Iran, they call it filtering, it got worse and worse. And in fact, most of the websites that are based outside Iran and cover political and social issues, and they are blocked. They don't even have to be against the Iranian government as long as they are not following the official laws. They are blocked, and in many cases, the reasons are not even clear. So anything could be perceived as something that endangers Iran's national security.
So some foreign governments, namely the United States and European countries, and some foreign NGOs have been trying to help internet users in Iran by providing proxies. What role does this play?
Proxies have probably enabled, I would say, like somewhere between a million to maybe like 2 or 3 million Iranians to have access to free information. And since most of these Iranians were either students or professionals or journalists, the uncensored information they got, they enabled them to, like, I mean, kind of communicate that information with the rest of society.
The proxies have the potential to help many more people, but Mehdi tells us that the Iranian government spends a great deal of energy and money searching for these proxies and shutting them down. In fact, the government allocates a huge number of resources to policing the net, from spying to hacking emails to blocking websites.
For most users, it's very difficult to not fall into the traps. There are so many sophisticated ways of making someone to visit a website that, which is a fake website, and making them to get enter their username and password for their emails or so on. Since the Iranian government is controlling the internet backbone in Iran and is controlling the entire traffic, it's very easy for them to do many of these tricks that are very difficult for an average internet user to avoid.
We hear a lot about these filters that the government uses. Can you just explain what those are?
Basically, several type of filters the Iranian government is using. One is just basically based on domain name. I mean, this is the main. The typical technique. So basically, Facebook, Baltarin, and many other domain names are blocked in Iran. If somebody types them in the browser, they would go to a page that Iran, like it's a Iranian government page, says you're not allowed to see this website. And or you are just directed to a directory. They have a directory of like Iranian websites, and that's what they show you. Like they used to have a keyword like blocking too. So for Google searches, they could block by the keyword. They have crawlers, basically things that automatically go and visit websites or blogs, and they count the keywords on those pages. Like if there are too many illegal keywords, but in some cases it's political websites, so there are certain keywords they've entered, and once a website has too many of those keywords, it might automatically get blocked.
I wanted to ask you, how would you compare or differentiate Balaterin from social networking websites like Facebook as far as its movement building capacity?
One thing that makes Baltarin a much better, I think, place for this type of activity is because, one is users are anonymous, unlike Facebook, people could write what they want. In Facebook, people are using their real name or they're connected with their friends. It's much more difficult for the people who are in Iran write what they are thinking. And another thing is just Facebook, the type of most of the activity on Facebook is not really like it's more for friendship or social connections and so on. So it's except that the days that there's something really happening in Iran, in most other time, the activity in terms of like social political activity is kind of sidelined. I don't say it doesn't happen, but it's sidelined. In Baltarin, it's I think the difference of the platform and the difference of activity is that it kind of tries by, it's a collaborative platform because people are voting or people are engaging in conversation with others. In a way, it brings people together. It tries to make a consensus by the kind of like postings that show up on the front page is something that's shared with everyone. It's not like a you don't have your own special like feed. It's what you see everybody else sees. So it's kind of like a in a way, it's a different platform, and it's more used for brainstorming for ideas.
Our thanks to Mehdi Yayanijad for joining us today. If you're not already familiar with his website, we encourage you to go to balatarin.com. There's also an English language blog linked to the website that you can go to at en.balatarin.com. That's all for this edition. For more on this story and other human rights news, you can visit our website at iranhumanrights.org. Join us next time for the Human Rights Podcast. Thanks for listening.